Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Doviak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Doviak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics today. I want to talk about news out of the Federal Reserve and their meeting being held this week. I want to talk about the potential for using your 401k plan for a down payment for your home and why that is hitting some troubled waters. Because Groundhog's Day is coming up, I want to talk about repeated financial mistakes. And then finally, when you're funding your 401k, should you do a Roth contribution or a traditional contribution? I'm going to give you some strengths and weaknesses of both. So let's get started with the bulls and bears market and economic update. This is for the week ending January 23rd, 2026. And it is now Monday, January 26th. I'm taping this a little before noon, and I am snowed in. I am in Oklahoma, and if I lived along a main road, I might be able to get out, but I live in a subdivision, and I live on a cul-de-sac, and there's no leaving my house for a while. So, you might hear a kitty cat meow. You might hear a background noise. I'm going to try to keep all of that from happening. But we are persevering because there were some things I wanted to talk about today. Last week, the market was down. Now, remember that last week, the president was in Europe, and there was all kinds of talk about Greenland and Denmark, and ahead of that had been Venezuela. So it was a really volatile week. What settled the market down was when the president said he will not use force to invade Greenland and take it that way, which calmed things down quite a bit because it was sort of looking like that might have been a possibility. There's still going to be long-term economic impacts from other countries deciding to do more business with countries other than us. But right now, really none of that is easy to talk about because we haven't seen the impact. There may be a little bluffing going on, and then again, it may not be. So we're just going to have to watch that and talk about it in different weeks. But the Dow closed down about 0.5%. The S&P closed down about 0.33%, and the NASDAQ almost got back to break even, down 0.06% for the week. Gold was the big winner, up 10.16%. Oil, West Texas Intermediate crude front month price, went up 2.39%, and that current price is now $60.71. $60 is an important price because that is, by many accounts, the break-even price on drilling oil, so having oil at 60 is kind of a sweet spot. The prices aren't too high for the consumer, but it's high enough that we can actually have some drilling from the oil and gas industry and not be quite as hard as that. The dollar dropped by 2.15%, but Bitcoin dropped by almost 4.5%. And I think it's really important to see that because for people who are thinking that Bitcoin is a hedge against a dollar. So in financial terms, a hedge means that something goes up when something else goes down. Bitcoin tends to just act as a magnified reflection of what's going on in the markets. So it's almost, it is not leveraged to the best of my understanding, but almost like it's acting with a leverage so that if the Dow goes down 0.5%, Bitcoin goes down by 5%. It's an interesting trend to follow. You can get any free financial software or website where they give you the ability to put in a ticker symbol and compare it. And so you want to compare the index of the Dow, the index of the S&P 500, and then the Bitcoin index that I use is BTC, so like Bitcoin, BTC, US dollar, USD, which means it's Bitcoin denominated in dollars. So that symbol again altogether is BTC, USD. And if you're curious to see how Bitcoin responds to the market, then go ahead and run it against the Dow, run it against the S&P. Sometimes people see that it doesn't act quite the way they thought it was going to. The 10-year Treasury dropped by 0.4%, and its current rate is 4.223%. The aggregate bond fund kind of bucked the trend a little, but there was a point last week where everything was down, whether it made sense or not. Aggregate bond fund was down 0.1%. Now, if you're looking at how do you take risk out of your portfolio, and I'm not saying it always works like this, but what you can see is that the Dow was down a lot more than the aggregate bond fund. The S&P 500 was down a lot more than the aggregate bond fund. So even though you didn't get growth in this particular economic circumstance, you got less loss. So even though when the 10-year Treasury drops, you would think the aggregate bond fund is supposed to go up, even when it doesn't, it would have actually been a nice protection against some of the risk of the stock market. And then finally, the volatility index went up almost 5.5%. So the big news of the week, I think, I mean, there's lots of news, not the least of which is the weather. I was just seeing a headline on the news that said canceled flights are like as high as they've been since COVID, when all of the flights shut down. So the weather is going to have big economic news. There will be economic impacts from this. We have all kinds of unrest going on. There may be impacts from that. We'll have to wait to see what happens. But I want to focus instead. I'm going to be boring and I'm going to be super traditional, and I'm going to focus on the Fed. So the Fed meets this week. Everybody is expecting them not to lower rates because inflation is still too hot and unemployment numbers are coming in all right, at least so far. The unemployment has not looked bad. So when you're making a decision just based off of economic indicators, you don't really want to lower rates when inflation isn't where you want it to be, because you can run into issues with all of this. The trick to the Fed rate is it's a sweet spot, and it's some art, some science, and there's a very good chance that the Fed is going to do nothing. In fact, right now, that is the expectation. So if the Fed does not take action this week, my opinion, they did what they needed to do. You know, they've already cut the benchmark rate by 75 basis points. 1 basis point is 0.01%. So when you cut it by 75, you've cut it by 0.75%. That was over 3 meetings, and it was 0.25% cut each time. Some people are saying that there won't be any cuts in 2026. Some are expecting cuts later in the year. It is sort of looking like it may be difficult for the president to fire members of the Federal Reserve Board. That case was heard by the Supreme Court last week, and although I did not hear the transcript of it, so everything I'm getting now, I'm getting from secondary sources, but the secondary sources that I'm using are business-driven secondary sources, not political secondary sources. So this is what like Market Watch and websites like that are saying, that the question wasn't really whether or not the Supreme Court was going to uphold the president's right to fire a Fed chair, but it was which argument were they going to use to tell him he cannot. So that would really be very good news for the economy, because what that would ensure is bond rates doing what we're anticipating, which means a new Fed chair comes in and does not immediately do a 2% cut. The fact that overall analysts are not expecting that to happen suggests to me that they are expecting the president to put someone into that position who is an economist, which would be a good thing. I do have some interesting insight in the next segment I'm going to talk about, because it relates to something else that happened this week. But, you know, on a lot of this, we just have to watch. Don't think rates are going to go down right now, and don't really know what they're going to do in the future. But as long as things can get just a smidge more stable, the market's been very resilient, and we'll just kind of have to wait and see what happens next.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I want to talk about something today that I think is important for two different reasons. First, you may have heard that there was some talk of allowing you to use your 401k assets to help with a down payment for a home. So what that would have meant in its original iteration is you would take money out of your 401k, and I am assuming without any penalty, although I would expect you'd have to pay taxes on it, be able to use that money without penalty to buy the house. Now, the person who was discussing this was Kevin Hassett, the director of the National Economic Council, and he was talking with Maria Bartiromo on the news, and he said that he was going to be talking to the president before he actually got done at Davos last week, and that they're going to let people, and this is a quote as best as I got it, take money out of their 401ks and use that for a down payment. Now, Maria Bartiromo had a very reasonable question, which is, you know, but that money's supposed to help you with retirement. If we make a retirement plan a revolving door, then when people get to the proper age, they may have bought a house, but they may not have enough money to retire with. And this is where the plan got interesting and or complicated, depending on how you want to look at it. So according to Kevin Hassett, the idea was, let's say you took 10% out, and I suspect there would be a maximum amount they would let you use, and use that to pay for the house, that somehow then you got to include that 10% of the home equity as an asset in your 401k. And so you'd be seeing the growth of that asset, and that it would, you're basically swapping cash for a percentage of your house. Now, let me start right here before I tell you the rest of the story, to quote my best Paul Harvey. I think there's a million things wrong with this. I think that there is such a possibility that there's no real way to get the value back out. I've seen how privately held real estate investment trusts, REITs, can become illiquid. And so, yes, you have an account that's worth a certain value, but you can't do anything with it. You can't use that money for anything. And I don't know, without taking out a loan that somehow you'd be required to repay, you could access that equity in your house. I don't know how you can, if you will, securitize your own mortgage. Well, the president agrees with me. So, you know, sometimes I can sound a little critical. I'm going to say in this particular instance, when President Trump was asked about it, he said he wasn't a huge fan of the concept. And now this is a quote of a quote, so this may not be verbatim, but it's going to be pretty close. I like keeping their 401ks in great shape. I like keeping their 401ks, and I'm not a huge fan of that, putting down a deposit. So I think he's right, and I think that whether it's just from the, you know, view from 50,000 feet of, now wait, what? Or whether you get more into the weeds and you can't figure out how you're going to securitize your own home residence. You know, there are people who try to create ways you can buy real estate within IRAs, but there's a million problems with that. I did a fairly deep dive into that when it was popular, when I first went into business. And at the end of the day, it looks much better on paper than it looks for most human beings when they try to execute it. Well, this is even worse because it's actually your house. So I said that this was interesting for two different reasons. Reason number one is you may have heard of it. Kind of doesn't look like it's happening. I kind of think that's a pretty good idea. It seems a little squirrely. But here's the second reason that you care about this. The person who was trying to push this was Kevin Hassett. Now, remember I said this was going to get related to the Federal Reserve. So one of the leading contenders for the new Fed chairman, who would be a good person with a business background, is Bessent. But Bessent has said flat out he does not want this job. So the second name that had gotten popular for a while was Kevin Hassett. Now, I have heard as of last week or maybe the week ahead of that, that there was in fact a yet newer person than Hassett. That person's last name is Warsh, W-A-R-S, maybe there's a C-H. I don't know anything about him. I have decided that it doesn't make any sense for me to focus on this. It does not make any sense for me to give you the list of candidates for the next Federal Reserve chair because we just don't know how this is going to go. But the fact that Trump is publicly criticizing Hassett suggests that the rumors that I've heard that he is not going to be the next Fed chair may very well have quite a bit of truth behind them. So we may not really know at all who the next Fed chair is going to be.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And it's almost Groundhog Day, which means we almost have January 2026 in the rearview mirror, and most of the month was nice. Given the mess we're in right now with the weather, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing it go. But on February 2nd, I am not going to care if it is cloudy and it rains. I still don't want freezing rain, but I'm just going to order up really gloomy weather for the country so that the groundhog does not see his shadow, so that we can only have six more weeks of winter. Because I am done. All of those people who had to have snow, they had to have cold weather. Well, congratulations, you have it. Now you need to let it become spring so that people like me can get outside and play again. But I was thinking about the movie Groundhog Day, which is, I know it's an old movie. If you haven't ever watched it, you really should. It's very, very cute. And basically, the main character has to repeat Groundhog Day until he fixes his mistakes so that he can move past Groundhog Day and have everything work. So it's really cute. It's really fun. And I thought, you know, it's a pretty good metaphor for what people do with their money. They make a mistake and then they turn around and they make it again. We have a tendency to make the same financial mistakes over and over again. Sometimes we'll find a brand new one to make, but usually we will repeat things. So today, I'd like to give you some tips on how to avoid Groundhog's Day with your money. So the first thing you have to do, and I will tell you, I do a lot of these tips myself. So I'm not asking you to do something that I don't do. But the first thing you actually have to do to get control of your money is start working with it. Take an hour a week to work with your finances, to make sure that you have everything written down. If you have bills that are due, you know when they're due, you know how much it's going to be, you know how you're going to have the money to pay them. If you need to write down the date things are due, that is perfectly fine. Write in the income you're getting, write in the date that you're getting it, so that you actually can begin to look at your money. Now, if you could do this for just 1 hour a week, and I would even let you do it while you were watching like your guilty pleasure television show, because you can do two things at once. You can review your finances and you can watch The Bachelor if that's what makes you happy. It needs to be like a guilty pleasure television, not something where you feel like you ought to be watching it. Because my little system doesn't work. If it's a treat that you work on your money while you're letting yourself do something you wouldn't do otherwise, you're much more likely to do it than you are if you're just sitting down and trying to find it. So take time to understand your money and where it's going. You know your bad mistakes, your bad habits. You know what you do. I don't really need to tell you that because honestly, when we are honest and we look at our money, we can figure out what we're doing wrong. So the question becomes, why do you make those mistakes? How did you get into that bad habit in the first place? I can tell you that I kept a really good budget until I got into graduate school. And there were two columns, money in, money out. You just had to have enough money in so that when it went out, you did not bounce a check. So all of my elaborate bookkeeping kind of went away and I got into some bad habits so that if I have money, it must be okay. Well, that's not true at all. And so one of the things that I'm doing, I wouldn't call it exactly a budget. What I would call it is monthly spreadsheets where I am working with things and then I know how much I can spend. It's like the discretionary versus non-discretionary things that I've talked about a lot. Do you make mistakes because that's how you were raised? Do you make the same mistakes your family made? Or do you go the other way and do you make exactly the opposite mistake? Because that's an easy thing to do as well. You don't want to do what your folks did, and so you do the opposite. Is your money behavior triggered by stress? And that stress can be literally anything. It can be stress over your kids. It can be stress over your spouse. It can be stress over your job. Are you a stress spender? So when you go off, try to look and see what else was going on in your life at that point. And that's going to make it a lot easier. Once you see that mistake, it's easier to control. Okay, so then once you kind of have a sense as to why the spending is the way it is, I want you to focus on one concrete thing that you could do the next week. So that, you know, I don't want you to try to get control of everything in 1 week because, quite frankly, you'll get frustrated, you'll get overwhelmed, you won't like it, and you'll quit. And so my goal here is to give you something you'll do. So what could you do to save money? Because inevitably, you know, nobody comes to me and says, I have too much money and I don't know what to do. Inevitably, we're just trying to get control of our spending a little bit. Could you get a travel mug, you know, one of the really cool ones, and take your coffee to work? Could you bring your lunch a couple of days a week? Could you avoid scrolling on your shopping sites? Could you postpone things that you think you want, but that you don't need? so that you come back to the site or the store at a later date. And then finally, and I talk about these a lot in around Halloween because they are zombies, and zombies make more sense in Halloween than they do for Groundhog Day. But imagine little zombie gophers, if you will, that are the subscriptions that you took out because of literally whatever. There is no judgment in this. But you need to look up all of your subscriptions and then get rid of the ones you're not using. I ended up with some weird college football subscription because some of the university games that I wanted to watch weren't available without the subscription. And then they were also available via the radio. And so I ended up with that too. It's just junk. And I'm spending like $40 a month. And I finally have decided that, you know, first of all, with the University of Oklahoma now in the SEC, most of the games are on television somewhere. And for the one or two a year that are not, I can go to a sports bar and eat as many chicken wings as I can hold and still spend less money. So don't try to do so much that you get overwhelmed. I really want you to pick one thing. And if you don't like any of those things, pick something else. Then here's where it gets fun. Write down the money you saved. Keep up with it weekly and monthly, because the reason we get overwhelmed and we quit is we don't think we've accomplished anything. So even if you're saving $5 a day on coffee or $8 a day on coffee, write that down. $15 a day at lunch, write that down. $20 a month. By the time you get done with all those little bitty changes, you're going to find out that you've actually saved a lot of money, and it's going to be way less irritating. So here's the last tip. If you screw up, if you fail, if you have a week and you spent every single thing you could think of, I don't want you to give up. I want you to pretend that the next day is Groundhog Day again, just like the movie, and I want you to try again. Because you're not going to be perfect at this. You're going to mess it up from time to time. And the trick is continuing to do it until you get it right.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I ran a little long in the other segment. So the question this week, I'm going to address one piece of it and give you the rest of it next week. And the question is, should I make contributions to my 401k as Roth or as deductible contributions? And so the first thing you need to talk to your tax professional about is, do you need a deduction today or would you be fine postponing it? Then, how close are you in your other income to filling the tax bracket you're in? You don't want to do a giant 401k change and blow up what tax bracket you're going to be in. So consider splitting things. We'll talk about this more because I talked about other things, but we'll come back and talk about this at a later date.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.